The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rich Bloomfield, and I'm the CPA.
Good morning, good morning. This is Rick Durfee, and I'm the lawyer calling in from beautiful South Carlsbad Beach in California.
I'm happy for you.
I hear you stayed up late because of tax returns.
Yes, it's almost October 15th, which tends to be a worse filing deadline than April 15th for me because I'm not sure why. Because I'm a procrastinator. My clients are procrastinators. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, well, all these big complicated business things, everybody has to extend their filings to get all the work done that it takes to file the return.
Yeah, so we extended those to September 15th, and now all that flows into the individual returns. But I'll tell you, Rick, what I'm really doing a lot of this year are gift tax returns because there was so much uncertainty at the end of last year that a lot of people decided it would be a great idea, and it was, to do some estate planning and take some chips off the table that way and make sure that they move that over to their non-taxable estate, and that requires a gift tax return. And so a lot of those are coming due October 15th. We've done a few of them, but on most of them we're waiting for appraisals and business valuations and that kind of thing so that we can include those in the returns. So unfortunately, we're going to get squeezed at the end and trying to put that stuff all together with just a few days left. So to say nothing of the individual returns that are
I'm glad to say that most of my work as the lawyer is done on that gifting stuff. I think we have a few mop-up details, but unlike you, we don't have to do the tax returns. We just get to watch you do it.
That's right.
So the reason we work together, let me tell our listeners, you and I, CPA and lawyer, an unusual combination, some people think, but actually with most of our clients, business owners, entrepreneurs, professionals, having a team of a CPA and a lawyer that actually communicate with each other and can speak each other's language and can address the issues jointly is a tremendous advantage to our clients. They get better served, they actually pay less in professional fees, and they're more likely to accomplish their business and cash flow and tax and estate planning objectives. So that's why we work together.
All right, and it works. And so far, we think our clients are well served and much better served because of that. So just so our listeners all know, you can reach us at www.whataboutwealth.com. We have a presence on YouTube. Just look for What About Wealth, and you can call us at 480-324-8000. And, of course, we're on the Voice America Business Channel, and you can download our podcasts from iTunes. So anytime you need to listen again or listen for the first time, just download us, and you can do it while you're driving around or whatever.
So, we have a fun topic today. We're going to be talking about this kind of, I guess, optimum buy-sell strategies. But buy-sell issues are challenging for businesses. I like to think of it as an exit strategy. If you're going in, how are you getting out? And we're going to explore that from top to bottom, A to Z today, talk about what works, what doesn't work, why you want it, what are the pitfalls, and what are some really cool things you can do with all that.
And we know all of those things. So,
well, we've been through the ringer on a couple of them.
So the, and I think the important thing to remember here, you know, people are, you know, I say buy sell and they're like, what is that? And, but if you have a partner in any sort of a business, you should become familiar with that term because, Rick, as you and I know, if you don't have a buy-sell agreement, things can get really messy and really nasty, and you just don't know, you know, sometimes how to proceed. And it all hits typically at a very difficult time when there's the disability of an owner or the death of an owner. Or if you set up buy-sells correctly, they can even help or be a benefit when someone retires, but that that all requires some planning to get it right because, boy, there's some really bad tax consequences, or you just don't have funding and you end up being partners with somebody you never imagined you'd be a partner with. So,
yeah, we can when we get into it, we can talk about the four D's, which I don't want to tell our listeners what they are now. They must hang on and find out what the four D's of buy-sell planning are so they can plan for those.
Okay. So, I'm not sure if we want to go to quote of the week.
Yes. Hit us with the quote of the week.
All right. So, I think, I don't know that I have one that really applies necessarily today. Sometimes it's hard to find one of those, but arriving at one goal is the starting point to another, and or a goal is a dream with a deadline.
Yeah, who said those? Those are good. Those are very good for buy-sell planning.
Well, Napoleon Hill said a goal is a dream with a deadline, and John Dewey said arriving at one goal is the starting point of it to another. So,
you know, I want to say that having worked with lots of business owners as they go through the transition of selling or transferring ownership to their children or whatever as they move out of the business, one of the most important things for a business owner to have is a new goal, something to do. I've just observed that there's pretty significant adverse health consequences as well as psychological and relationship consequences if that business owner doesn't have a project to get up for and go to work on the next morning when there's no longer a business. So even if you've lived the American dream and you built a business from nothing and you've created a vast fortune and now you're living off of the earnings of your massive investment portfolio, you still need a reason to get up in the morning and something to go do. So anytime you hit one goal, set another one. Both professionally and I guess attitude, psychologically wise, spiritually wise, that's just a principle that we all need to live by. So that's very good. And we're going to address some of those goal issues as we talk through the buy-sell issues we have today.
Yeah, and Rick, I have one other one because of what's happening today with the ongoing government shutdown. So this is Will Rogers. The more you observe politics, the more you've got to admit that each party is worse than the other.
So, you know, that's we can be universally offensive here. That's one thing I regret to say that I agree with, that on any given issue, one party will be worse than the others and they keep trading places. It's
I know it's really unfortunate because Maybe I'll have to be like Bill O'Reilly and become independent or something. These guys are driving me a little nuts.
Well, so. You know, I just look off a little political commentary. I'll try not to get too carried away, but they get elected to office based upon a principle. Often they're advocating for whatever their party will require to get elected. But then once they're elected, then it's all about preserving power. And they quickly discover, and I've actually known personally people that have gone into this environment. They get into the political environment, and there's now a new pecking order, and new rules, and all the back and forth that goes along inside of the legislative process is just a new territory, and it subverts them, it co-opts them, and suddenly instead of acting for the principles that their constituency elected them for, now they're acting for their own self-interest to retain power. And it's the end justifies the means kind of situation. Well, if I'm not in power, I can't do what my constituency wants. But the only way to retain power is to not do what my constituency wants. So I think the politics is self-corrupting for our.
That's really unfortunate. So, but it. Sad but true. Well, I don't know. I think with Rick being off on the beach, he's the guy that usually finds the give back story. I don't think we have one today.
Yeah. So. Our give back story is pick up your own trash. And in fact, pick up someone else's. That's a rule my children have lived with when we go camping. And it's something that because they've grown up with it, they've just figured that's the way life is. But when we go camping, we not only clean up our trash, but we leave it better than we found it. And we will go through and pick up other people's trash. And I must say, I don't mean to disparage any particular group, but it seems that they're out in the wilderness when you get out there and you're picking up other people's trash, there is a conspicuous abundance of alcohol products. Beer drinkers just have a hard time figuring out what to do with their cans and throw them out in the bushes. And man, there's a lot of that out there. So
it's the Durfee family give back story today.
There you go. Something like that.
You guys have picked up hundreds of thousands of tons of beer cans and put them in the right place. So maybe not that much.
I don't know if it's that much. I can tell you that it's not uncommon that we double our trash. We'll have our trash and then an equal amount of other people's trash that we carry home.
So you come back home or somewhere and they think you're a big drinker.
Yeah, well, you went on vacation, Rick, and you come back with sacks full of beer cans. What's up with that?
Wow. Well, it could be. That's a double-edged sword there. All right, so before we go to the first break, maybe we want to kind of set up our topic for today. And so I think I did that a little bit at the beginning, but just to give everyone just kind of a glimpse of what might happen here is if you have a business with a partner, and Rick, both of us have had partners, and so we know that there are really great things about being in partnerships, and then there are things that you have to worry about, and there are things that maybe aren't so great. But there are a lot of businesses out there that start. You might have a partner, you might have multiple partners, but whatever the case is, when you own a business, as you alluded to earlier, figuring out how you're going to exit the business really, really helps to clarify a lot of times how you want to run the business. And so, and a part of the exit strategy for any business with more than one owner is that you need to have some agreements between the partners as to how things are going to go if something unexpected happens. And so that typically is embodied in a buy-sell agreement, which means, okay, if I need to sell for whatever reason, or I'm just not here because I'm dead, then, or I'm disabled, then what are we going to do? And how's the business going to go on? And if I'm not alive, then is my wife going to own the business with you, or are you going to want to buy me out? And if that's the case, then how are we going to do that? And what are all the rules, and how do we do it so that we don't incur a lot of tax, or the business doesn't undergo a bunch of trauma and then fail because somebody is not there? So those are, Rick, you're the attorney, and so you know, yeah, you know, more than of all the little things that are embodied in a buy-sell agreement or in proper exit strategy documents. But in general, that's the problem. And
you know,
so
I've noticed a generational thing. I think it's a generational thing. I'll call it this. Maybe it's an age thing or a decade thing, whatever decade of your life you're in. The closer a business owner is to retirement, the more likely they are to recognize that these issues matter and that they require attention. And the younger they are and the further away the possibility of retirement is, the more clueless they are. You suggest to a business owner that's in their 50s that has a partner, hey, how are you going to manage, retirement, when whatever an event occurs, and they've thought about it and they recognize, yeah, that's an issue. But I've had the experience of talking to a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old business owner about the same issue, and you get the deer in headlights look. What do you mean if somebody dies? What do you mean if somebody becomes disabled? They suffer from what I call the myth of immortality. They're still young enough and lack enough life's experience that they think they're going to live forever and that they're going to have this business forever, and it really doesn't work that way. The businesses have an economic life cycle. They have a startup time and a growth time and a thrive time, and then there's either an exit and you pass off this highly profitable and successful business to someone else, or it goes into decline because the key people are gone because they're dead or disabled or they've moved on to something else, and the value of the business is lost. I think another significant aspect of this that people don't always pay attention to is regarding your business as an asset with a value that you can sell. So many startup entrepreneurs that are new, and this is part of the American dream, I guess, that, the new person who's never owned a business can start one and have a dream and build it. But they tend to view their business, the value of their business, in its present ability to produce an income. They view having their business like a job. Well, I work in, this is particularly true of professionals. They tend to view owning the business of their profession as a job, and so they don't see it as I'm creating something valuable here that someday I can sell and fund my retirement years. So if we can get them to have that paradigm, that perspective, that view of their business, that I'm creating something that has value here, and I'm not going to want to do this forever. And when I want to stop, here's my way out. So all of that plays into this big time.
Right. And Rick, the interesting thing about that whole thought process is that to successfully sell most professional businesses, for example, you look at a dentist or you look at a CPA or a doctor, they need a person. Typically, at some point, it's going to be a partner that comes in. Otherwise, if you just expect that someday you're going to turn 65 or whatever and sell it to somebody, and then it's going to just go on without any consequences, you're kidding yourself, because clients or patients or whoever they are just not going to stick around. That's almost universally true for someone else. I mean, some of them will, but there'll be a huge hit to the value of the company if you don't bring someone on. So what that says is, you know, at some point, even if you're just a professional that's built a very successful practice, at some point you're going to need a partner. And so this buy-sell arrangement is very critical and is going to apply to almost everyone that is in business at some point.
We better pick this up again after we take our break. We'll come back and talk about when you have that partner, how do you structure the deal so that you don't shoot yourself in the foot, proverbially speaking. We'll talk about that when we come back from break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success. Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's D-U-R-F-E-E lawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone, to What About Wealth. This is Rich Bloomfield, and I'm the certified public accountant.
And this is Rick Durfee, and I'm the lawyer attorney. You get more than one word. I'm the lawyer.
All right, and we're talking about buy-sell agreements. And Rick, at one point earlier, you said we were going to talk about the four D's and of buy-sell. So tell us about that. What are the four D's?
Okay, the four D's are the trigger events that invoke the provisions of a buy-sell agreement. And the most common ones, the two that get included all the time, are death or disability. So if you have a partner and they die, okay, we have a deal already on the table that we worked out long ago. What's going to happen if somebody dies or if somebody becomes disabled? Okay, we figured that out. We have a plan for this. It's an emergency plan. So that's invoked. What are we going to do now? But some of the other ones are, so that we have death, disability. Then the third one is disgruntlement. And this is, okay, nobody's dead, nobody's incapacitated, but this just isn't working. So our beautiful partnership that we hoped to have last a long, long time is broken, and how do we get out? And then the fourth one is kind of related to that sometimes. It's maybe one of the causes for the disgruntlement. I call it the deadbeat provision. What happens if one day your partner just disappears? Well, my partner was here yesterday working with me in the business, but now they're just gone. And I can tell you that I've had that happen many times where someone will come in to me, a new client will come in, and they'll say, wow, I had a partner, and we have this company together, and we were working together on our business, and suddenly my partner has vanished. And often, sadly, they've taken valuable parts of the business with them. They took the cash, they took the equipment, or they've taken something with them. How do I move on and recover and keep the business from dying? So that disgruntlement or deadbeat one is a big, huge one. And of course, one, I need a clever D word for retirement, so we could have five D's. The DDDDR, retirement is also an issue that kind of plays into that. Maybe retirement's voluntary disability. I'm still physically and mentally.
Or disengagement.
Disengagement. Oh, you came up with a D. There you go. Disengagement. I'm going to disengage from the business. So, and the scenario you mentioned is classic for that, where you have the older approaching retirement age business owner and the younger ramping up their profession or career partner, and the succession plan is at some point the older partner bows out, hands the reins over to the younger partner, and the younger partner takes the business and runs with it. And of course, what the older partner wants is to know that all the value that they've created, all the time and energy and heart and soul that they've invested into building this business, is going to give them a return. And the return they typically want is security during their senior years, so that their income, instead of abruptly stopping when they no longer work in the business, is going to continue to pay them and support them during their retirement years. So those are the how many D's are we up to now? Five. Death,
got five,
disability,
yeah.
Disgruntlement, the deadbeat, and disengagement. And you know, now let's talk about a typical thing that people that are you know, they'll hear a show or they'll read an article and they go, okay, let's do a deal. And there's a couple of classic ways, and the most common one that we see, especially with people that don't know what they're doing, is what I call a stock redemption. It's where the business is going to buy out the partner that is gone for whatever reason. You know, any one of the D's, they're dead, they're disabled, they you had a fight, they're a deadbeat, or they want to retire. And the classic structure is what used to be called a redemption plan, and that because we were dealing with stock. Now these days, with the newfangled types of business ownership, it's not always a stock interest that we're redeeming, but it will be a structure under which the parties have the company buy out the party that's leaving. And there are some interesting issues that come up with this approach, not the least of which is, where the heck do we get the cash to finance this transaction? Because if you have a situation where, wow, both partners were working in the business and we're barely bringing in enough money to feed two families now, how are we going to continue to feed two families when just one of us is working? So that's a huge issue. And then, of course, anytime you redeem business ownership, there are tax issues on are we using pre-tax dollars, after-tax dollars, present earnings, future earnings, are accounts receivable, are we selling assets, how are we raising the money to pay for this, and what are the tax consequences of all that? So that's the stock redemption, or the redemption plan is the first and most obvious option that people have. Then the other thing we see is people begin to puzzle, okay, well, gee, paying for this transition of the business from one stage to the next when one of the partners leaves, paying for that from the earnings of the business is burdensome. It's onerous. It's just not practical. So then they begin to look around, well, maybe there's something else we should do. And so we see then the very creative use of insurance products. And the most common one, the thing that gets people in the door is the death. What if your partner dies scenario? And of course, the life insurance industry is very, very tuned into this and very aware of the need in businesses. And of course, has ready products to promote for the business owners to employ to finance this event. So if you have a partner who is now deceased, if you had life insurance on that partner, then you can use the life insurance to finance, to provide the cash that you need to buy out the dead partner. And so I want to walk through what I've seen happen more than once. The partners say, well, we have our company here, whatever format it is. It's a C corp, or it's an S corp, or it's an LLC taxed as one of those, or taxed as a partnership. And that's where the money is. That's where the money's coming in. So the classic move that they make is they run out and they'll have their corporation or the corporate tax structure purchase this life insurance, and often at the urging of a well-meaning but sadly under-informed insurance advisor, they'll go buy the life insurance in the corporation. And Rich, you and I have actually worked on a couple of cases where we've seen this kind of thing happen. And sadly, what they don't recognize is that having the death benefit pay inside of a corporation has huge unintended tax consequences. Ordinarily, the death benefit on a life insurance policy should be income tax free. It should be estate tax free. And having life insurance owned by a corporation can subvert all of those. It can cause the insurance proceeds to be taxable for income as income. I've seen it trigger alternative minimum taxes, and it can absolutely amplify the estate tax consequences. Obviously, the more successful and valuable the business is, the more likely that is to happen. So, how the insurance is owned is a huge, huge issue. Another challenge we have is when you have the corporation own the life insurance that's going to fund this cross purchase agreement, then you have the challenge of what happens if the partners decide to part ways and they're gonna leave. Well, then you have the issue of transferring the life insurance out of the corporation. And what is that? Is that compensation? Do we have transfer for value rules issues? And we talked about that a week or two ago. So that too then becomes an issue. So bottom line is, the life insurance is usually, and more often than not, a very good idea, something that the lawyer and the CPA who are not the life insurance advisor are going to come and say, you really ought to look at this. It's going to be a crucial part of what you have going on. But we then, on the other hand, don't want that life insurance owned by the corporation or the business entity.
Okay. So I guess the thing that we need to do now is let's just talk through a couple of examples of how to do this, because you and I have seen it. Sometimes even when you're on the right idea, the right path, so to speak, you sometimes still don't quite do it correctly, and you end up with unintended consequences. So maybe it's better than not doing anything at all, where you don't have anything in place. But what I guess pains us a little bit is when we see that people have all the right elements, but they just didn't put them together correctly. And so you end up with a situation where, well, there was enough proceeds from the life insurance policy to take care of the buyout of my partner's now widow. But unfortunately, there are all these tax consequences that we didn't plan for, didn't think about. And so now I can only do a partial payout. And in the meantime, I'm going to have to make payments, or I've got my partner's wife as a partner in my business, and that's something that I didn't really want, and she didn't really want, for that matter. So Right. Or he. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there's some other issues here that you raise that I kind of want to touch on before we go to break, and that is that sometimes the life insurance, you have too much, so you have more death benefit than you have company. I've seen that happen, but the more likely scenario is you don't have enough. You purchased your life insurance with one value in mind, and then time happened, and you were actually successful at doing what you said you were going to do, and now your business is worth even more than it was then. So the bottom line, when we come down to what legal documentation do we want to put in place, you frankly want a combination cross-purchase redemption agreement that allows you to do a little bit of both as needed and as you have resources available. So just from a legal documentation perspective, the combo cross-purchase / redemption agreement is the ultimate way to go, not one or the other. But then I guess kind of to illustrate your point, Rich, I want to give an example that I had. This was very early in my law career, actually. A client that I had nearly 25 years ago, as I'm thinking through the dates here, I came in. I was, frankly, a young lawyer working with a senior attorney that was a veteran. Yeah, but I was the guy, so I was doing all the heavy lifting and all the planning, and we helped this company. They had three partners, and we helped them document the buy sell agreement. We were working with their advisors that helped them acquire both life insurance and, in this instance, disability insurance. And I remember sitting in the room with these three partners, all of whom were fairly young, in their probably early 30s, and so they weren't at retirement age, and they had an exciting business idea and were looking forward to a great career and a good business. And a few months after we did this planning and we put it all in place, one of the partners, who was an avid motorcycle rider, was riding his motorcycle when a truck pulling a trailer changed lanes in front of him and knocked him off his bike, and he wasn't dead, but he was severely disabled and was no longer able to come to work, was no longer able to work in the company, and we had to have that conversation. Well, the event for which you bought insurance and for which you paid the lawyer's money to do some legal documentation, that event has now happened. And sadly, in this case, the guy that was hit by the motorcycle was in fact disabled and was no longer able to even communicate effectively. He spoke with a slur, and he was cognitively impaired. I guess the most polite way I can say that he just was not altogether there. But part of the challenge was he didn't know that what he didn't know. He didn't know that he could no longer come into the business, and he was still young and still had a heart that wanted to go to work, and it was very, very difficult for him emotionally to come to terms with the fact that, no, he wasn't going to work anymore. But in spite of all that, the happy news was he had this disability insurance, and for the last 25 years now, he's continued to receive these benefits. And I might add that because of the way they structured it, with the good advice of their advisory team at the time, they paid for those disability insurance benefits with after-tax dollars. So instead of paying for them with company money, they paid for them with post-tax earnings. And the tax consequences of that was that for the rest of this guy's life, all of those disability checks that he gets every month are income tax free. So here this gentleman, and I have had contact with him over the years, has continued to receive these disability payments on a tax free basis. And even though the business went on, and I might add too, let me think about this. This was about 8 years ago. So 16, 17 years after that event, the business actually went through some catastrophic problems, and the business fell apart and collapsed. And all the other two partners are now doing something else because the business is dead. And this guy that we had the buy-sell agreement with the disability insurance is now continuing to receive his payments. So we can talk about some more of these examples. I think we need to go to break here, Rich. When we come back, we'll talk about some more practical examples, and we will give the grand secret, the ultimate way to structure a buy-sell to handle all these issues. We'll talk about that when we come back from break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success. Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's D-U-R-F-E-E lawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back. This is Rick Durfee. I'm the lawyer.
And this is Rich, and I'm the CPA.
And this is What About Wealth, the amazing radio show that we are having such a fun time doing. We really do enjoy this. And our topic today is the ultimate buy-sell planning. How do you structure your buy-sell agreement? And Rich, we were talking about a couple of examples. I know you've seen some things as well in buy-sell planning. Talk to us about, in fact, I'm thinking of another case we had together where we were struggling with the issues of the inclusion of the business and the life insurance in the taxable estate of the partners. And we had another lawyer with an interesting attitude towards all that. But so another challenge we have here, I guess, with buy-sell is you go buy the life insurance, and if you own the life insurance personally or even inside the company, the death benefit when it pays is included in the taxable estate of the partners, which can now create yet another wrinkle in the situation where, we have this really valuable business and we're excited that we were smart and had a buy-sell agreement in place. So we've got a succession plan, but ouch, now the dead guy's family is going to be paying taxes that we didn't want them to pay. And maybe even the surviving partners are going to have a worse tax consequence. So let's introduce the idea here, Rich, of using the partnership entity and then talk about how that entity is owned in the planning structure.
Okay, so so Rick, the excuse me, when you think through structuring this kind of thing for a partnership or a business that has multiple partners, then I think our listeners will understand why what we're going to suggest next makes a ton of sense. Let's just say, just for the fun of it, that you have a business that has six partners. Now, if you go out and each of you and just looking at this at a base level, you buy a policy, a life insurance policy on each of your partners. That means that there are going to be 30 life insurance policies that have to be purchased and paid for. That gets a little bit onerous, to say the least. And there are many businesses that have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 partners, that are all key, to the success of the business. So, so that kind of highlights, that's kind of a big problem. So what can we do that would make that, easier? And, as you suggested, what is typically done, and this actually works better from pretty much any angle that you can think of, is that the company, whatever kind of company it is, corporation, LLC, bonuses each of its owners enough money every year to pay for premiums. So let's say you have this group of owners, and they have buy-sell agreements between all of them, and they're funded with these policies, whether it's disability or life policies, and so the company effectively pays for those policies, and they do that though by bonusing each of the owners. Then the owners stick all these this bonus that they get. They put the cash into another entity, which is a partnership. And what the partnership does with the money or the contributions to the partnership is it goes out and it purchases life insurance policies. And so instead of having to have 30 in my example earlier, then you just have to have 6. And just, you know, the partnership owns a policy on the life of each of the owners or the partners. So you took care of that problem, and it's a lot more, it's a lot easier to deal with. And you only have 6 policies that you have to worry about. And so, Rick, let's say a partner dies, then what happens?
Yeah, the partner dies. What happens is the life insurance policy pays to this partnership, and what happens to the proceeds then are governed by the agreement of the partnership. And I want to kind of add a little nuance to what you described. You described the cash flow in terms of its tax consequences. The money that's paid out by the company does get taxed to those owners, but the company can write a single check to the LLC or to the partnership, which is going to flow through as a bonus to the partners. So we don't have a dozen checks flying around, or 6 go out to the 6 partners, and the 6 have to write a check to the partnership, and then the partnership pays the premium. You have 2 checks. Company writes 1 check to the partnership, and the partnership pays the premium. And then at the end of the year, when they do their tax work, the partnership attributes all those bonuses, quote unquote, to the partners. So a partner dies. Now we have this buy-sell agreement that kicks into place, and the dead guy's family gets the money, and the surviving partners get the company. And so essentially, you're using this life insurance money to finance the purchase of the interest in the company that's owned by the dead guy. So sadly, again, the dead guy's family has to deal with the fact that their beloved family member is now dead. But the silver lining, the happy thing in that, but at least you're not broke. So they get bought out. They now have cash. So they have recovered the value that their dead family member had created in the business, and they are going to be able to enjoy and use that value, that cash, to then live on or pay off their home mortgage or whatever it is they're going to do with it. But they get to choose what they're going to do, and they have that value. And of course, then the surviving partners, our 5 other partners in your scenario here, get to carry on with the company and are no longer burdened by having to
make payments.
Yeah, make payments to the dead guy's family, or to struggle with the emotional burden of, gee, we've got a dead partner. What do we do in this situation? I've actually seen situations. I saw a situation a number of years ago where they didn't have any buy-sell planning, and the partners, out of moral obligation, were continuing to share an equal share of the profits of their company with the spouse of the dead partner, and they were feeling the pinch of having to carry the full burden of doing all the production, but not enjoying the benefits of their labor. So this structure just eliminates that completely. Now, and this, by the way, is something that's promoted by the insurance companies. It's promoted by lawyers and CPAs who know what they're doing. But I want to throw in this additional wrinkle that we mentioned, and we've got to do this in the few minutes we have remaining here, and that is the fact that, well, okay, this interest in the company, let's say that the partners have succeeded at what they said they were going to do. They've created a super valuable company, and in fact, a company that's worth enough that the value of the company is so great that when a partner dies, there's going to be an estate tax, which, you know, that used to be a smaller number, and now it's a pretty big number, $5 million indexed to inflation based on 2011 dollars. So it's currently $5.25 million, and that number will change from year to year as long as the politicians can keep their fingers out of the pie. But if your company's worth
more
than
that. Well,
we don't
have to worry about it too long anyway.
Yeah, they'll mess with it sooner or later. But if you then go buy part of this company from your dead partner, now your estate tax problem is even bigger. So you're creating, you're passing up, avoiding one bullet to take another. And what we don't want to do is have these unintended tax consequences down the road. So what we need to do in that situation is cause the partnership to be owned in such a way that this transaction is going to reduce or at least avoid an unintended estate tax. So in our scenario here, let me add this wrinkle to it, and we'll kind of do a summary description of a classic estate planning move. If you own something personally, it gets taxed when you die. If you don't own it, it does not get taxed when you die. So a classic move is to create an irrevocable trust, and this can be an intentionally defective, IGID is what they call it. It can have dynasty provisions. It can have all kinds of stuff, other bells and whistles added to it. But anything owned by this irrevocable trust is not included in or taxed as part of your estate when you die. And, oh, by the way, if it's properly structured, not available to your creditors, so you get some fairly significant asset protection. And we can actually cause this trust to be the owner of the fractional share of this partnership that's going to buy the life insurance. Now, let's consider the consequences of that. When premiums are paid on this life insurance, they flow through the partnership to the taxpayer, and the taxpayer in this case is still the partner. Even though the LLC or the partnership is owned by an irrevocable trust, if it's grantor defective, daddy and mommy who own the company are still going to end up paying the taxes on it, which they were going to pay anyway. So their tax reporting is fairly simple. It was income tax neutral during their lifetime. The taxes didn't go up. They didn't go down. But then the partner dies, and we have a death benefit pay. And what happens is, for the dead guy, their interest in the company gets bought out. So once again, the surviving spouse is going to get the proceeds of sale from the company and is going to be able to provide for their needs. But the other partners, the surviving partners now, when they buy their piece of the dead guy's interest in the company, they're not going to buy it personally. which would cause inclusion in their taxable estate. Instead, their irrevocable trust is going to buy this interest in the company. So now the irrevocable trust of the surviving partners outside of their taxable estates, unavailable to their creditors, is going to buy this interest in the company. And so we no longer have to go through all the machinations of other advanced planning. We don't have to worry about gifting, and we don't have to worry about discounting, and we don't have to worry about all those gift tax returns you're plowing through right now, Rich. Now, instead, that irrevocable trust just out of the box, when the partner dies by virtue of the agreement and the structure, is going to acquire that interest, and it's going to be owned in a way that passes estate tax free to the children and the grandchildren, you know, the family members of the surviving partners. So I know we went through that pretty quick, but that's kind of the overall summary.
All right. So we always know when we start into these topics on these programs that we will run out of time, because they're typically complicated and involved, and there's multiple ways you can do it. But what we just want to demonstrate is that the problem, demonstrate the issue, and suggest that there are great solutions, and that we understand those solutions, and we can work with you to set those up, to make sure that from all aspects of these kinds of things, we do it the right way, and so that. In this case, when you pass on and you're a business owner, that those that you leave behind, both in the business and in your family, are taken care of properly. So give us a call, 480-324-8000. I'd love to sit down with you. If you have this kind of an issue, let's talk about it. The time to do this is now, not to wait, because things happen. And we will be back here again in another week to talk about more exciting things, things that we think are exciting, on What About Wealth?
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.